Okay, today is Wednesday, December the 20th. This is the Women's Chumash here. We're up to Bereshit, Perek Tedvav. Okay, Rabotai. We are up to Bereshit, Perek Tedvav, Pasuk Tet. Tet. Okay, last time we focused on Perek, on Pasuk Tet, and here's what's happening. Avram is promised of the land, and he speaks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, Bama Edaki Irashena. How do I know that I'm going to inherit the land? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to take three calf, three goats, three rams, and two birds. And we went through the lengthy Rashi explanation as to what the symbolism of all of those animals happened to be. The common denominator is that they are korbanot. Not just any korban, but korbanot chatat. Various types of korbanot that were offered for transgressions. And that's how Rashi explained it. Others just felt it related in general to korbanot. That was the Ramban. And now there will be an instruction what to do, or lack of an instruction. So after hearing these instructions, Pasuk Yud, which we focus on today, Vayikach lo et kol eile. Avram took all of the above, Vayivater otam batavech, and he cut them into half. Vayitain ish bitro likrat re'ehu, and he placed both halves facing one another. Each half of the animal was put on one side, facing one another. Ve'et hatzipor lo vatar. However, the bird, he did the two birds, even though it's written in the singular, that hatzipor lo vatar, he did not cut them in half. Then, vayered ho'ayit al hapigarim, birds flew over the pieces of animal, the dead animals. Birds hovered over it with the intent to attack and eat it. Vayashev otam Avram. Avram blew them away. Okay. So let's, as we always do, let's start with Rashi. Vayivater otam batavech. Says Rashi, chilek kol echad l'shnei chalokim. He took each of the animals, and there were 11 in total, because we're going to operate with Rashi, that there were three calves, three rams, three goats, and two birds. So he took all 11, nine of them, the animals, he cut into half. Chilek kol echad l'shnei chalakim. Ve'ein hamikra yotzei midei peshuto. This pasuk you should only exclusively interpret simply following the pshat. That's a funny remark to be made by Rashi, who 80% of the time, 70% of the time, chooses to interpret a pasuk based on the midrash. And here he's alerting us that there are plenty of midrashim, which there are, and I'm telling you, do not explain it in any other fashion other than the simple pshat. Why? What is happening? Lefi shahaya koreit imo brit. God was establishing a covenant with Avram, lishmor haftachato, to, in effect, guard, literally, I'm translating it literally, guard his promise, Lehorish Libanav et Haaretz, to enable Avram's children to inherit the land. Kidechsiv, as it is written a little later, Bayom Hahu Karat Hashem et Avram Berit Lemar. God established a covenant with Avram, saying, "Lizaracha etena ta'aretz hadot." We'll see that pasuk when we get up to pasuk yudchet. V'derech korte berit, and the typical pattern behavior of those people who established a covenant was lichalek behema, to split an animal in half. V'la'avor bein bisareha, and to walk in between the two halves of the animal. That was the existing practice at that particular time. So do not attempt to attach any other interpretation, but this was a practice that was well established, and God is now telling Avram, I want you to do exactly what everybody else does. And what do they do? When they want to establish a covenant, they cut an animal in half, you walk between the two pieces, and you say whatever is to be said. Fine. That's how Rashi explains it. The word lishmor havtachato means literally, it means to guard or to watch. And so I want to show you another pasuk where the root shin mem resh is used, and we'll understand what it means in this particular pasuk. So if you'll open up to chapter 37 for a minute. Bereshit 37. It's the last pasuk before Sheni. I think it's pasuk Yud Gimel, if I'm not mistaken. What? Yud Aleph. Excuse me. This is after Yosef shares his dreams with his brothers. Vayukanu bo echav ve'aviv shamar et hadavar. What does it mean? It doesn't mean guard. His father guarded. What did he guard? He anticipated. He's waiting with unabated anticipation, waiting with anticipation for it to be fulfilled. Ve'aviv shamar et hadavar. The brothers were jealous when they heard Yosef describe royalty, that he was going to rule over them. They understood that was the symbol of the sheaves of grain, the bundles of grain bowing down to him, and certainly the sun and the moon and the 11 stars bowing down to him. They understood that. So they were jealous. And Yaakov was waiting for this to be fulfilled. And that's what Shamar means. Here too, what does it mean in Rashi? Going back to our Rashi, Koreit imo berit lishmor havtachato. God establishes a covenant to wait with anticipation to fulfill His promise. To fulfill His promise. And in order to enable the promise to be guaranteed, what do you have to make? What do you have to make? A brit, a covenant. That's what Rashi and virtually all Parshanim understand. And it's incredibly difficult to understand why this must be the case. This promise is not made by two human beings, where you could anticipate that one of them might renege on their commitment. So that in order to guarantee that you will not, so you engage in some type of covenant as a symbol that under all circumstances I am going to fulfill this. We're dealing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who promises that the land will be given. So why does he need a brit in order to make sure that the promise that he made with Avram will indeed be fulfilled? Why? Why does he require a brit? And the answer is, this because this gives us some idea about every single Brit that God makes with Am Yisrael. And He makes many Britot. We will see there's a Brit called Brit Sinai. At Sinai we established a covenant. There is a Brit in Arvot Moav, described in Parshat Ki Tavo and Sefer Dvarim. And there is Brit Avot, the Brit that is made with Avraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov. A promise always means that whatever the two sides agree to, both of them have to keep their sides of the agreement in order to mandate that the other honor his or her commitment. Both of them have to honor their commitment. So when God makes a promise to give Eretz Yisrael, Avram understands, and rightly so, that the promise is only as long as what? As long as you fill your side of the bargain. What's your side of the bargain? You follow Torah and mitzvot. That's the bargain. I will give you the land. You create a relationship to serve me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But once Am Yisrael breaks their responsibility, breaks their agreement, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is released from fulfilling his responsibility. That's why you establish a covenant. Because in a covenant, each of the two sides obligate themselves to observe their part, despite the fact that the other part has totally abandoned their responsibility. That's the advantage of a covenant. So in this particular covenant, it works both ways. And we've seen it both ways. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises that I will give you Eretz Yisrael. He demands from us that we follow His way. So the moment we disobey Him, that does not release HaKadosh Baruch Hu from His responsibility to guarantee that the land will ultimately be ours. He can throw us out for a while, but He can't give it away to anybody else. And the same thing is true with us. Even if we are out for 2,000 years, and it appears as if, what? We've been driven almost permanently from the land. We have no right to say the Torah is no longer binding upon us. The Torah is binding upon us. And we have demonstrated an enormous commitment despite the fact that for 2,000 years, Am Yisrael were divorced from the land. So that's what it means, lishmor haftachato. A haftacha is conditional, is a promise upon the condition. How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu promote that which He wants to give is unconditional? By establishing a covenant. So therefore He instructs him to take these animals and to engage in a covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nowhere in the text does it actually say that God told him to sever the animals and to walk in between them. It says, Vayikach lo et kolele. He, Avram, took the animals directed by God in the previous pasuk. So, if you will now just take your sheet for a second, for 1 second. Hold on one second. Take a look at page 1 on the bottom right hand, the Sfarno. In Pasuk Tet, Kicha li egla, lichrot berit. I want you to take these three calves and so on and so forth in order to establish a covenant. Limahan yied divarai, so that my words will be gzar din. Maze gzar din. A decree. Sheyesh imo shvua, that is accompanied by an oath, she'eino mitkareya, that can never be what? Severed, torn apart. Kidivrehem zal, as the rabbis in the Gemara tell us, this is the purpose of the covenant. So not only does man need the covenant, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself needs that covenant. It's somewhat of a dangerous idea to float that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't be trusted when he makes a promise unless it is surrounded with a covenant, because Havtacha is a two-way street, not a one-way street. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will never abandon the land, from never take away the land, if we were following his commands. He would never do so. And then he adds, V'chein bi'er Moshe Rabbeinu bi'amro. Moshe, at the end of his life, this is found in Parshat Ekev, Lo bitzit katcha Hashem Elokecha morisham lefanecha. God is not going to enable you to inherit the land because of your righteousness. Elowat ki birishat hagoyim Hashem morisham ulema'an hakim et hadavar asher nishba ata bo lareshet. Wow, says Sfarno. Even the very first time that we enter into Israel, do not believe that it's lo bitzat kacha, not on your own righteousness, on your own merit. Why will we eventually inherit the land? Because God made a promise. Because He made a promise. He made a covenant. I'll take you're the first one. So it's somewhat unusual to have such a pessimistic idea or impression of Am Yisrael, that Moshe is telling them, I know what's going to happen, that you are not going to deserve entry, but God's going to bring you in only because of the fact that He made a promise. Chazal challenged Moshe Rabbeinu because they say in many locations that during the reign of Yehoshua, Am Yisrael were indeed incredibly loyal and devoted unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that was a perfect reason as to why they entered the land. As opposed to with Moshe. Moshe, we know, they were rebellious all the time. There's hardly a time that they ever listened to him. Every episode, they're always complaining about certain things. Yes, hold on one second. Yeah. Right. Because that's a condition. First of all, okay, you're asking a question, a technical halakha question. That if God makes a condition with us, why didn't He formulate the condition the way the laws of conditions are supposed to be made, as the document Parshas Matos we call Mishpatei Hatnaim? Because that you can't apply halakhic standards to what's happening before Matan Torah. You can't. So, and also the whole idea of a brit is you don't need it. There are no conditions. Once you make a commitment, you are obligated to honor it, even though the other guy abandons their commitment. That's the whole idea. Yeah, question.
I got the answer.
Okay, noch besser. So that's a very powerful statement that Sfarno makes. Sfarno makes. Yeah. Now, the only thing that he cut were the animals. The birds, he didn't cut in half. Why not? Why not? What? That's going to be Rashi. And we're going to see the Ramban. So Rashi is bothered by this. And Rashi doesn't say anything about who directed him to cut anything up. There's no place that God says, I want you to cut this because we're making a covenant. So take a look for a second, just for a peek, quick glance. Page 2, bottom of the left-hand side, which is the Radah. He's bothered by this as well. And he writes, does Radak, Ma shebatar, uma shelobatar, that which Avraham cut in half, And that which he did not cut in half, namely the birds, haya b'mitzvot ha'el, had to be based on the command of God, v'afal pi shelo zachar etzeh, even though the Torah makes no reference whatsoever. Torah doesn't say this. Torah says that Avram took them and cut them up on his own initiative. But you have to say that this was based on the directive of God. First of all, why would anybody make a difference between the three and the other two, the birds? The animals, yes, and the birds, no. That doesn't make any sense logically. Secondly, you don't just go cutting up animals for no reason whatsoever. That seems to be a little on the cruel side. But it goes well above and beyond that. This statement of Radak, that it had to be with Tzivui Ha'el. Had to be Tzivui Ha'el. If you ever study Sefer Vayikra, and it's skipped in every single school, the first five or six parshiyot, if you learn Vayikra, everybody starts Acharei Mot. You learn chapter 10 of Sefer Vayikra, which is the only story of the narrative of Sefer Vayikra. Chapter 8 of Sefer Vayikra, which describes the death of Nadav and Avihu. And that you'll study. And then you'll go to Acharei Mot, which picks up the narrative. Acharei Mot, Shnei Bnei Aharon, Bekarvatam Lefnei Hashem, Vayamutu. So nobody in schools today studies Sefer Vayikra. Why? Because I don't want to say that word. Because it's not relevant, there's no narrative in it. To get kids involved understanding technicalities of Korbanot, you're not going to make fans of Chumash study out of studying Sefer Vayikra. That's for sure. Of course, the very first part. I had that when I was a kid, of course.
Because you learn why it's a small
hour. Well, hey, that's one reason. So, but there's a Medrash. The Medrash says that. That you're supposed to start with teaching Parshas Vayikra, just the first couple of psukim, then it's okay to go to Lech Lecha, to Shmot, to Bereshit Perek 12. So the Medrash says, Yavo Tahorim V'yit Asku B'Tahara. The Medrash says that Tahorim, innocent little babes, shall come and start their learning experience discussing things that are Tahor and Tameh. Tahara. Beautiful korbanot that are tohorim. Yeah, okay. I once said it offered a different shot. I think that it's a different reason. Because Rashi says, Sefer Vayikra starts not Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemar. It says Vayikra el Moshe, Vayidaber Hashem Elav. Seems to be repetitive. Vayikra el Moshe, Vayidaber Hashem Elav. So Rashi says, Vayikra is Lashon Chiba. And that every time that God spoke to Moshe, he preceded his dialogue with a loving call of affection. Hi Mo, how are you? That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu started talking to him. That's the reason why you're supposed to start teaching kids Sefer Vayikra. It's not a lesson for the kids, it's a lesson for the teacher. If you want to succeed in your succeeding, convincing somebody, let it be Lashon Chiba. Not to stand there with a big stick policy like some of my rabbi. I don't know about your rabbi. They hit you with a stick if you made a mistake. Or you called out, whatever it is. So, anyhow. Fine. So, how did I get lost in this? Oh yeah, so all of Sefer Yikra are the nitty-gritty details of Korbanot. I'm just going to give you an example. Every single Korban has a sprinkling of blood. Every single Korban. Some are sprinkled once. Some are sprinkled twice. Some are sprinkled four times. So there's a line around the Mizbeach to divide the Mizbeach between the upper half and the lower half. Some of the blood is sprinkled on the lower half. some of the blood on the upper half. So Abarbanel, at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra's introduction, asks a question. Should I bother to explore the symbolism of every last detail of a korban? Why is this korban sprinkled once, the next korban twice, the next korban four times? Why? Why should I sprinkle this korban on the upper half, this one on the lower half? Why is this one the fats consumed on the Mizbeach, this one the fats are not consumed on the Mizbeach? Why is this one all completely burnt? Why? Says the Ramban, says the Abarbanel, don't even bother wasting your time, because you're never going to figure it out. You can say whatever you want, but it's irrelevant. Why are there different rules? Just to follow the details. Because if you deviate one iota from any detail, you have worshipped Avodah Zarah. There is no difference, says Abarbanel, and he's 100% right, between pagan ritual and a Jewish korban. There's no difference. The pagans sacrificed on the altar, not only human beings, which we don't believe in, but they sacrificed animals as well. So what difference is there between a korban and the Beit HaMikdash, a pagan ritual? One thing, Asher Tziva Hashem. That's it. So all of the korbanot have different rules and regulations, so that you want to know, you want to bring a korban, it has to be in complete compliance with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Same thing here. If all of the animals are now represented as a korban, and Avram's going to be told to make a brit with these symbolic korbanot, everything has to be commanded by God. So Radak says, of course, even though the text doesn't say it, but if it wasn't recorded directly by God, what would it be? It would be another pagan worship. No different than any other pagan worship. So even though the Radak has zero proof, I mean zero proof, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to do this, it had to be in accordance with Sivui Hashem. Because if not, it could not be represented as a holy sacrifice, a holy korban with God, that you're making this condition. So Radak's words, just taken off simply, but are to be taken very seriously. And I just alert you to the fact that Abarbanel says that at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. Why do certain wine libations have X number of wine point? Why do some have X number of flour as the Korban Mincha that accompanies Uminchatam v'niskeyem kindubar? Shloish esroinim lapar, shnei esroinim la'ayel, right? Isaron la'kevel. Why? There is no reason. No logic. It's just to distinguish it and follow the rules. Follow the rules. That's the simple reason which the Ramban points to why Nadav and Avihu died. Because it was Asher Lo Tziva Hashem. That's it. You don't need Rashi's Medrash that they died because they were Meira Halacha Bifnei Rabban, or they entered while they were drunk, Shesu Yayin. You don't need that. God didn't tell you to do it. It's Avodah Zarah. Penalty for Avodah Zarah is death. End of discussion. That's point number one, which the Radak makes. Point number one.
Why didn't Avraham think to just bring them as a korban?
Because he was told not to. That would be another. The logic thing would be to be mocked with them as a korban, not to be korate brit. Correct. That supports the Radak. 100%. It's a very good point. Says Rashi, let's go back to Rashi first before we expand. Rashi says, in the next Rashi, Ve'et hatzipor lo batar, lefi sheha'umot nimshelu liparim elim usi'irim. All of the various nations, claims Rashi, there are psukim in Tanakh to support Rashi's notion. You can find the pasuk for anything. And they represent, are represented symbolically by being a par, by being an ayu, and so on and so forth. Fine. And he quotes psukim. You can read them yourself. You can read them yourself. Then he continues three lines later, where it says, Sham Chaf Aleph, V'Yisrael Nimshalu Libnei Yonah. What are Am Yisrael? Somebody blurted that out before. What are Am Yisrael compared to?
Doves.
So, what do you think the imagery is? What's the imagery for cutting off the animals and not cut? It's quite simple, says Rashi, if that's the imagery. The nations of the world are going to be cut up, and Am Yisrael is not going to be cut up. It will always survive. Always will survive. Kacha lomeid Rashi. And he writes, Lefikach basar habehemot, remez shiyu haumot kalim v'holchim, ve'et hatzipor lo basar, remez shiyu Yisrael kayamin le'olam. Okay. Kacha lomeid Rashi. Take a look at page 3 for just a moment. On the right hand side towards the top is the Ramban. Now, I'm going to give you, okay, says the Ramban. Do you think, ladies and ladies, that every animal, how was every animal put on the Mizbeach when it was a korban? How was every animal put on the Mizbeach? It was always cut up. Exactly. Always. The Torah says, Vayitach ota linitacheha. You cut it up, and you don't put the whole animal on there. So when he's told to cut the animal, he understands that it's imitating something about a korban. He does understand that. Now, birds... Ah, here comes the Ramban and finds an insight. Let's read the Ramban, Ve'et HaTzipor Lo Batar. Natan Hator V'Hagozal Ish Likrat Re'ehu. He took one bird and placed it opposite the other. Tor, we always translate it in Cheder as an altar bird. And the Gozal is a younger bird. One is an older bird, and that's the way the Torah offers the possibility of birds. Sometimes a korban is offered as a bird. If a person is destitute and cannot afford an animal, so there are certain situations when you're allowed to bring a animal, a bird, instead of the animal. Then there is even one lower level. If you can't even afford a bird, for certain korban, you can bring a mincha out of flour. That type of korban is called korban oleh v'yored. Oleh v'yored. It depends on your financial bracket. Whether it'll be under the new tax plan or the old tax plan, depending, right. Some of us will have to bring an animal because we're going to pay less taxes. Some are going to bring a bird because we're going to wind up paying more taxes. It depends on the tax bracket. So, says Ramban, how do I know that they, even though they were not cut up, they were put against each other, opposite, ki gam heim hayu b'nei bris. Because God told them to take what? A Torah and a Gozal. So they have to be participating in what? In the covenant ceremony, without necessarily being told to be cut. Avalo batar otam bataver, ki b'chol ha'ov ha'karev, Ne'emar lo yavdil. Lo yavdil. Does anybody know how the act of sacrificing a bird differed than sacrificing an animal? Anyone know the most critical difference?
The way you kill it?
The way you kill it.
Rid its neck?
No. When you take an animal and sheft it, it has to be done with a knife. A bird is not shefted with a knife.
With a nail
of the kohen. He pierces the back of the neck until he reaches the bone. It's not a pretty sight. And you have pretty sharp nails. That's why you have all those nail stores on Cedar Lane. Because of the Kohanim. They are practicing to keep their nails very, very sharp. Because we believe the Beis HaMikdash could be built tomorrow. Yeah, fingernails. Yes, your fingernail. It's his thumbnail, which he inserts until he cuts the back of the neck, mimul arpo, an animal is shechted in the front of the neck, the bird is cut in the back. But once he cuts it, the Torah says, lo yavdil, do not separate it. It has to be still attached. Still attached. So therefore, under those circumstances, that's why Avram did not cut it. Because he knew, he was told the halacha that olat ha'of is not, the Torah says, lo yavdil, don't separate it. Animals are cut up, so therefore he cut up the animals, but he did not cut up the bird. However, the Ramban, that's his pshat, is honest enough to know, to tell us, it's not true about all birds. Look at the next line. Ubibereshis Rabba, Hera lo hakadosh baruch hu, shemavdilin be'olat ha'of, ve'ein mavdilin be'chatat ha'of. Wow. The Ramban just came here to explain why did Avraham not split? See, he tells us because the animals are never split entirely. The bird is never split entirely. It always remains one entity, as opposed to what? As opposed to the animals, which are split into many pieces, actually. Now the Ramban said, what I just told you is not really true. It's only true by what? For what? For chatata'of. But olata'of is separated. So if an olata'of is separated, why didn't Avram separate the two birds? An oaf that is brought as a korban chatas. Olata oaf is a bird that is brought as a korban olah. So if it's a korban olah that you bring, you do separate it. But if it's a chatat that you bring as a bird, you don't separate it. What do you think the Ramban wants us to think of in this scenario by citing us, besides that he's being honest and admitting that what I just told you is only half a truth? That does what?
All of the animals.
Exactly. That everything here is supposed to symbolize chet, transgression, and the method of purification. Rashi here initially told us that, if you remember last week, that this all of these animals, the three, refer to different type of chataot. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that his children are going to what? They're going to sin left and right. But I've given a mechanism by which they can attain tahara through the various chataot. So Avram, when he sees the two birds, he knows that what do I want it to symbolize? Not the olat ha'of, which is separated. I want this to symbolize the chatat ha'of, which is not separated. That's what I want it to symbolize. I want you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to remember that when my children sin under X, Y, and Z, and the formula, the prescription to attain atonement is a chatat ha'of, a korban chatot, brought through a bird, I want you to remember that and grant them kapara, atonement, to enable them to either remain in the land or to return to the land, basically to remain in the land, because outside of the Beit HaMikdash there are no korbanot. So,
so this is like Avram's putting it like on a pikadon. I know that my children are going to sin, so I'm giving you an advanced korban.
Excellent suggestion. Excellent suggestion. It's as if Avram is in effect knowing, predicting what's going to happen. So let me put in the Right, exactly. Let me put in the steps that are necessary in advance, or at least to give my children the opportunity. And we read the Midrash last time. What are they going to do when there are no korbanot? Right? So we said you have to say the korbanot. And we said that last week in Rashi. If you'll just go to page number 4 for a second, I'll take a question in a second. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, which is a famous collection of Midrashim, authored by none other than Rabbi Eliezer, one of the Tanoim, on our Parsha. I bracketed, it's a very long entry, I bracketed the relevant part. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Lokach Avraham Charbo Ubatar Otam Kol Echad Ve'echad L'Shnayim. Avram took his sword and cut each one of the animals into half. Shine Emar Vayivater Otam Batavech. Ule Ula Ilule Lo Batar Avraham. Had Avraham not cut them in half, Lo Hayah Olam Yachola Amod, the world would not have survived. Ho'il ubiter otam, and since he cut them in half, he tish et kocham, he weakened their powers. So when he weakened their powers, and that's why they fell. So when I read this the first time, this midrash, you know what flashed in my mind? Hitler, Yimach Shemai. And it's true about all great conquerors. What exactly was their aim and objective? No, not divide and conquer. What is their... To what?
Destroy.
To gain control of what part of the world? Every part of the world. To control all of mankind. Every dictator. Everything. And there's no doubt, you know, Hitler had these grandiose dreams of, you know, had the United States not entered, who knows what would have happened. Really, who knows what would have happened. You know, he wanted to go to Africa, he did send troops to Middle East, there are all kinds of plans that he had. If not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreeing to Avram with this covenant, the symbol of, so when he sliced those animals in half, what in effect did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do for every dreaming dictator who ever lived? What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? I am telling you in advance that you are not going to succeed. But if Avram had not extracted that commitment from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because ultimately it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu that decides who wins and who loses, under those circumstances, it was a possibility that certain Sonei Yisrael would have gained dominance against the entire land. So they use the symbol of the covenant here as a real symbol of what is about to unfold. We are going to be subjected. In fact, we will learn a little later that God, Rashi's going to quote the Midrash again, that in the very next pasuk when he falls asleep, that Avram is going to be shown 4 periods of galut in our lives. It'll be the Roman Empire and the Greek Empire and the Edomite Empire and so on and so forth. And each and every one of them could have been powerful enough in order to control certainly little tiny Medinat Yisrael. But right now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreeing to the splitting of those animals indicates that as powerful as they are, they will eventually become part of a history book and nothing beyond that. So this, what's happening here, according to the Midrash, is not just a symbol. It's not just symbolic. It's actually a prophetic vision of what's going to happen. It's what's going to happen. And the Ramban will repeat his often claimed statement that the Avot is only, their lives are simply symptomatic of what's going to happen. What? To all of Am Yisrael. And it plays it out time and time again. Time and time and again. That's what he will quote 68 times. 68 times. Yes, question.
Doesn't this scene really heighten the intensity of the Akedah? Because that, because this would, on the one hand, seem to be a guarantee that Hopper gets like he sacrificed, he's getting the land, but also that.
That's an excellent point.
God commands this formulaic thing, and okay.
That's an excellent point. There are many who state that it was never the intention of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to ask him to sacrifice Yitzchak. And Avram probably knew that. But the Nisayon was, and we'll study it in greater detail, was he willing to actually do something which he didn't believe was right, that could have happened? That's, you know, we'll talk about it. It's a very good point. That in light of the drama that is being described here, it is impossible for Yitzchak to have been slayed completely. You're right. Yeah. That's correct. These were the rules of the time. That's true. But how do you say it relates to Yitzchak?
There was child sacrifice, so God told him to bring him up. It kind of made sense.
Because this is whatever, just like with imitating the world ways here, we're imitating the world ways. Are we possible?
Was to not sacrifice.
I that's what some, that's Rabbi Riskin once said that. And probably others as well, that the real test was to see whether he would tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not doing it. Because you don't believe in human sacrifice. That was the real test, and that he, quote unquote, failed the test. That's what some say. Yeah.
You would think Abraham must have been saying something to the Akedah again and again in his head, B'lai Daki Oshem. And that the big question that wasn't resolved.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Now, I have to leave 5 minutes early, but I want to give you homework. If you go to page 5 and 6, on the bottom of the page, this is taken from the Alshich. The Alshich's style is exactly like Abarbanel. He asks about 10-15 questions, and then he proposes an answer. I already peeked at his answer, it's not terribly compelling, but his questions are incredibly compelling. So if you want to do something between now and next week, try to go through from the bottom where it says page 9, and then on page 6, you don't have to go all the way through until he starts giving to his answers. But he starts asking lots of questions in that till the end of the first paragraph. He says something. He starts introducing Tchiyas HaMeisim, which is not for me. But see his questions. His questions are right on the mark, and we will continue next Devach with understanding, moving on, and how Avram falls asleep, and even one more pasuk, which is even more difficult. The Torah will report that after he cuts them, some birds come and Avram chases them away. Like, who cares? And there's no comment about it whatsoever. Then he falls asleep, and then comes the message. So we'll continue with that next Devach. You're welcome.